After decades of denial and stonewalling by the Catholic Church and lack of action by New Jersey state lawmakers, among others, this past week has given cause to believe that the pain of survivors of sex abuse by priests will finally be addressed fairly for those survivors rather than protective of the rapists. Our first guest today is with us to review the advance of a long-proposed change in the laws about reporting sexual assaults and some of the steps the Catholic Church in New Jersey has actually taken, too, albeit reluctantly. He is the director of the New Jersey offices of the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, Mark Crawford. How are you today, Mark?
Good, Chris. Thank you.
And for you in New Jersey, to learn more about the work and support the work of SNAP in New Jersey, it's snapnetwork.org/new_Jersey. And if you're listening on stream elsewhere, snapnetwork.org, and you can find your state offices in that means. This past week, we saw a terrific advancement of a piece of legislation in the state Senate, long been trying to be pushed through by Senator Joe Vitale. And it looks like the Senate gets it now, and it goes over to the state assembly, where they're a few steps behind the process. But one would think if the Senate gives its approval, how can the state assembly not and still keep their jobs? But what is this legislation all about? What is it going to change?
Well, it will change the statute of limitations for not just child sexual abuse victims, but also adults. So that's huge. It also would expand the category of those who could be held accountable. So when institutions knowingly recycle a known predator, they could be found responsible. That's long overdue. It's the impetus we need to force these organizations and institutions like our church to do the right thing instead of hiding, concealing, protecting known predators and putting children back in harm's way. The bill would also open a 2-year window for any past victims. So if they've been barred in the past due to the statute of limitations, that would be lifted, and they would have a 2-year opportunity to take action and achieve justice. For a lot of these victims, it's about being able to tell their story, their truth, and to uncover what's been hidden and kept from us all along, you know, the whole truth. When did these institutions, like our church, when did they know? What did they do about it? Did they put this predator back into ministry or back into a working environment with children where more children were hurt? And some of these victims never had to be victimized. And it's really important that people have access to our justice system that's long since been denied. So this is a tremendous step forward. 40 states since 2002 have in some way amended their statute of limitations for child sexual abuse. So New Jersey's quite behind, but we're about to take a giant leap forward, hopefully. And this bill would put us leading the nation in terms of victims' rights.
Finally, the bill, by the way, is S-477, if you want to go to the State House website to look it up. The hearings were just a perfect display of what the conflict and what the problems have been. You had, among others, Patty Fortney Julius. She was one of five sisters abused by the same priest who spent decades working in New Jersey and Pennsylvania, telling her story, as painful as that is, even after all this time. And then on the flip side, you had the executive director of the Catholic Conference, Patrick Brannigan, saying that his organization supports lifting the 2-year statute of limitations, but he wants to delay implementation law for 1 month to January 2020. So in his words, the Victim Compensation Fund, which has an end-of-year deadline for claims, quote, has an opportunity to work. Fortunately, the lawmakers apparently do not agree with that idea.
Absolutely. Look, they have had decades already to clean this mess up and do the right thing. The laws all along have been in their favor. Victims are lucky to even find a lawyer who would want to take on a case once it was beyond New Jersey's extremely limited 2-year statute of limitations. That's 2 years from the age of 18 or 20. Or 2 years from discovery. When victims make the connection between the harm and the abuse, they're in no shape within 2 years to deal with any type of justice within the system. They need to heal first. They need to get help. So this is a tremendous change. And for institutions, whether it be the church or the scouts or the insurance lobby, to stand there and say, this is unfair, is just mind-boggling to me, incomprehensible, because for years they were protected. And all we're asking for is a level playing field. And it looks like that's about to happen. And that's the only reason why we've seen them prompted to take action, this limited action, albeit still not the whole truth, releasing a list of the known predators within the church, some of them, not by no means complete, and offering a compensation plan for victims.
I'm Mark Crawford, who is the director of the New Jersey offices of the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, snapnetwork.org/new_Jersey. And if you're listening elsewhere, go to snapnetwork.org, and you can find your state offices in that way. You're listening to Issues and Ideas. Talking about that list, I remember reading that list when he came out with the name after name, and the one thing that stood out with me was in the list that was published, it had the not specific details about the crimes committed by these priests and others, but it had a general term, and the one term was multiple victims over and over and over again. And it was chilling just to see those two words in the majority of that list.
Yes. Well, that list, it's not what's not important is what they told us in that list. What's most important is what they did not say. And so, for example, the example you just mentioned, either single versus multiple, they were not prepared. They refused to, I shouldn't say not prepared, they knew, if on some of these abusers who have had 50 or 100 victims or 20 victims, I know that sounds incredible or impossible, but one would ask, well, how did they not know? So they weren't about to put, well, first of all, it would show how many hundreds, if not thousands, of New Jersey children were abused. So they weren't about to put multiple. I mean, they weren't about to put the actual number. They used multiple. That's a problem. In the listings where these men ministered, they didn't put any dates or time frames because many of these men, in between some of those assignments, were sent away for treatment for years. And if there was a gap in the time frame, somebody might ask a question. Well, where were they? You know, when they were away at St. Luke's Institute getting treatment for pedophilia, or in Jimenez Springs, New Mexico, at the Servants of the Paraclete. These were two places they were often sent. And so none of the time frames were listed. You don't know in which assignment, you know, when, well, did the abuse occur? When he was with my children at this school or this parish? Not listed. Additionally, the list they put out doesn't even include all the diocesan clergy that have been publicly accused. In the parish where my children attended school, St. John Vianney's, there's two listed among the Metuchen Diocese list of only 11, but yet there's three more that have been accused, even convicted and spent time in jail, two of them, and not at all mentioned on the list. So the list is by no means complete.
Well, it's a matter, too, of how some of these dioceses were defining sexual abuse, which is a, you know, kind of gentle term versus what it actually was, rape. Patterson Diocese, for example, they had a review board that determined a bunch of years ago allegations against a priest who had been accused of fondling a minor didn't meet the definition of sexual abuse as stated in the Dallas Charter. That's the 2002 agreement that U.S. bishops put together to remove from ministry any priest who was credibly accused of sexually abusing a child. So in Patterson Diocese's mind, fondling was not sexual abuse. That's just wonderful.
Right. No, they bent every single word they plied to bend in their favor. In fact, That's not the only case. I can think of several where they listed child pornography, yet in the case of a father, Kevin Gugliotta, right?
Yeah.
They had known, it was brought to their attention, he had molested a young boy and sexually harassed him before he was even ordained a priest. Yet Archbishop Myers returned him to ministry in a parish where he became the youth minister, and now a victim has come forward in recent years to say that he was also sexually abused and molested by him when he was a priest. And, you know, he just spent 23 months, probably less, with good behavior or whatever, but he was sentenced to 23 months in jail for the trafficking in child pornography charges. He was many charges. He had uploaded child pornography to an internet chat room out in Pennsylvania.
I'm glad you mentioned Gugliotta, because I was looking at that story, and this was the direct quote from Gugliotta. He told probation officers after he got caught, he collected the pornography to get, in his words, revenge on God for his poker losses.
Yeah, he's a nationally ranked poker player, which he's still at, which nobody knew. He made a couple $100,000 doing it, it's just incredible. These are the kind of individuals, like I said, this came up even before he was ordained. Yet they said, they never told the victim, but they said they sent this off to the Vatican. And the Vatican said, listen, because he abused before he was a priest, you can't do anything about it. That's absolutely insane. It was incredibly, incredibly irresponsible and reckless, without a doubt. Now we've learned more kids have been abused since that never, ever, ever should have been a victim.
Yeah, if a daycare center hired a pedophile with their record still on the books, that daycare center would lose their license to operate.
Exactly. And this is just one case. I mean, there's many cases of diocesan priests who are not listed. We know not a single religious order priest, many, not listed by the list, the 188, almost 200 they had put out. The list, I believe, one day will surely at least double or close to doubling. I think when the grand jury investigation is finished, from the victims and survivors who have stepped forward to tell of their abuse in past years, they excluded, as you said, they excluded. I know there was Father Redlinger years ago from the Trenton Diocese was removed from ministry. He's since left the priesthood, but he was soliciting sex from it was a sting actually, but he thought he was talking to an underage boy, and grooming this kid every step of the way. But he's not listed. He's not been put on the list. He's a diocesan priest, but they did not include that. He was in a parish. He was removed for it. And these are they split hairs. They did everything they could to keep those numbers as low as possible. And that list will surely, surely grow.
Well, it gives the apologists the platform to say, and I saw the figure, it's estimated about 4% of priests perpetrated these rapes. Oh, it's only 4%. Say only 4% to their victims. See how that makes them feel. That would be a great comfort. Well, you only attacked by 1 of 4% of the priests. So,
well, I will tell you, if you look at any diocese that has had a civil investigation, in fact, once the investigation's been complete, that number easily doubles, and in some cases, have found as high as 12, 13, and 14% of the clergy of a particular diocese had abused children. So that 4% is way underreported. It's not accurate by any means.
Well, once the bill goes through the state assembly, the governor has said he is going to sign it. Once this becomes law, Mark, do you think this is going to compel and give a greater comfort zone for more to come through to, you know, for example, to call the church abuse hotline that the Attorney General set up, which is 855-363-6548, for your information, if that's something you feel compelled to use right now, is listening to this conversation, hearing what you've been hearing the past few weeks. But do you think that that's The act of this passage and making it a law is going to be the relief that people need to say, all right, I know I'm not alone. I know there's others now, and I feel more at ease coming forward to tell what happened to me.
I certainly hope so. I do believe so. I know it's happening now. Look, we need to stop as a society sweeping these things under the rug. We know it's ugly. We don't want to hear about it. We don't want to know the real truth. Like you said, this wasn't just touching or groping. We're talking about rape, you know, oral sex, masturbation. That's the fact of it. We have to stop coddling this. And I'll tell you, as those victims do hear and realize they are not alone, as many victims often felt for years living in silence. And by the way, we know most victims, if ever, do not come forward till, on average, the age of 52. So people are coming forward. I can tell you as an advocate, my phone has not stopped ringing off the hook. And many of the victims calling are in their 60s and some in their 70s, saying they've never spoken about this before to anybody. So, yes, I absolutely believe that. I think it needs to happen. I hope and encourage anyone who's been abused or know of abuse to call the Attorney General's hotline and talk about what you know. It's confidential. There's a lot of protections there. Please, I hope people feel, if they're at a place where they feel safe enough, call, speak your truth. Begin to heal, and let's help change this system. Because only by changing our civil laws, the civil investigation that's ongoing, that will create the impetus for all institutions to not continue to put our children in harm's way, to change their ways, and stop putting the needs of the institution first, but people first, even if it's because they're afraid of a civil action. Right? Whatever it takes. But it's long overdue. I am absolutely thrilled that the Attorney General has taken this on, and the many men and women, the detectives involved, with listening to these harrowing stories of the victims day in and day out. And
I want to add, too, by calling the 24/7 hotline, 855-363-6548, to tell your experiences and to further empower the Attorney General to investigate even more cases. You're adding an empowerment for others to come forward by knowing that, again, you feel that you're isolated because it happened to you and you don't see it as something that happened to other people. The truth is quite the opposite. And also over at our website, because as Mark and I talked about, the list that the New Jersey Diocese had releases is vague at best, and that's being complimentary. I have the PDF on the download page over at issuesandideasradio.com of the Pennsylvania Grand Jury Report. It's a lot of pages. The bulk of that is details of what those priests, some of them who had been spending time in New Jersey as well as Pennsylvania, by the way, and the evil actions that they perpetrated. It really gives you the truth of what the Catholic Church has been hiding for so long and trying to run out the clock, especially in New Jersey with the statute of limitation laws, which looks like it's going to finally change in favor of the victims of the horrors that so many of these priests had perpetrated and the higher-ups up to the Vatican had turned a blind eye and a deaf ear to for all these decades. The round-the-clock hotline again in New Jersey is 855-363-6548. Learn more about the work of SNAP, the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, snapnetwork.org. In New Jersey, it's /new_Jersey. Of course, we have a link over at our page as well. Mark, congratulations, because the hard work that you've been a large player with in New Jersey, especially and along with the dedication that Senator Vitale has had to this issue as well, the payoff, I think, is finally here.
Finally, we certainly hope so. And we do thank Senator Vitale for championing this cause all these years. And certainly I want to thank our legislators who are finally coming around and getting it and understand the need that the time is here. We must fix this. And not just here in New Jersey. We hope this happens in every state. It will change. It'll be a sea change for any, you know, for sexual abuse, sexual assault victims throughout the country. We see that's happening, the Me Too movement. We see what's happened in Hollywood. You know, it's time. It's well beyond time. And as a society, and hopefully corporate America even understands, this is something we need to talk about. We need to support these victims and the organizations or charities that assist these victims. We really can begin to make a significant difference. But we have to feel, victims have to feel safe enough to be able to talk, get out there, tell their stories. And that is so critical. And we thank the media and, of course, you, Chris, for covering these issues. It's critically important, and it is absolutely making a difference.
Yeah, well, you and I have been talking about it along with others for a lot of years. And like I said, the payday is finally here, and justice is going to start to be done. That's going to be a long road, too. Not to say that that's going to be easy, but we have to start at some point. And I think the starting line is now set up, and the race is not just ready to be run, but the race is ready to be won.
Chris, the onus is always on the victim or the plaintiff, right, to prove his or her case. This is no slam dunk. They're just looking to get access to the justice system so that perhaps discovery can be made and they can find out the whole truth, the truth that's been kept from us for so long. You know, who knew what, when, and what did you do about it, or what didn't you do, and why not? So, of course, that needs to be addressed. It's coming. The day is coming. Light is finally being shown on these areas where, for years, such darkness has kept these secrets quiet.
Mark Crawford, thanks for your work. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Chris.